This is a production of Cornell University.
I now call the meeting to order at 4:40 p.m. on September 25th, 2012. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. The minutes have been distributed to you guys. Is there any modifications to the minutes? I hear none, so any move to approve the minutes for September 11th, 2012? Alright, minutes have been approved. The next item on the agenda is the report. First, we're going to have Elizabeth to give a report from the executive board.
Alright, so we had an EB meeting last week, and we basically talked about three major categories of discussion. We talked about our UA committee, we talked about bringing in speakers to the UA, and we talked about initiatives to improve communication of the UA on campus. The committees, we talked about just basically it was staffing issues, so that we suggested that we ask that UA committees be staffed by October 1st. And then following that, we recommend that to committee chairs that they hold their first meeting prior to October 16th, so we have a meeting of the UA on October 16th, so if you're doing the math, somewhere between October 1st and October 15th for committees to meet. Some of the potential people that we are issues that we'd like to bring to the UA to discuss are transportation, the staffing processes of the UA, or the JA, which would be the same person, Mary Beth Grant, public safety issues, and family service support, including trailing spouses, elder parent care, and child care. With regard to communication practices on campus, we talked about hosting a coffee hour with the UA, where representatives and leadership from the UA would be present to have sort of a meet and greet and FaceTime with students. And we could also bring in community leaders for those particular events. We're also reaching out to the Daily Sun to have articles printed before our meeting. And we're also just looking for more suggestions specifically about how to reach out to your specific constituencies. Because obviously what may work for one group may not work for another. So if you have any ideas, just feel free to let any of the executive board know. And that's about it.
All right. Alan Gillen isn't attending this meeting right now, so if, Melissa, okay. If you would like to.
So you should have all the slides on the essay filled. We're still working on some committee slides. let's see, things going on in the essay right now are a resolution on gender neutral housing. Which is going to be for the students on the Thursday.
You want to move on?
Yeah. Mitch, could you give a quick report?
Sure. We have, again, almost all of our GPSA spots from the UA team, so looking for a couple more voting members, which is definitely easier to get than and grad students. Other things in our community, not tonight, it's really easy to do these reports because our meetings are the day before. I don't even have to like think about it, just pull up our agenda. We passed a resolution last night to support the dining committee's proposal that will hopefully become a reality to make a meal plan that's friendly to grad students. Currently grad students have no meal plan that does not cost them more money than it would to get, which is really absurd. And so one of our members has been doing a great work on that dining committee. So we passed a resolution supporting his work and his work making a meal plan for Gatsby. We're also working on, I think Liz mentioned 2 weeks back for me, that we're undertaking the Graduate Community Initiative update. And so we've had an ad hoc committee that's been meeting about that, and we're hopefully going to engage as much of our grad and professional community as we can in that update. Should be a good thing. The other thing that we're kind of considering is it's just come up to the exec board of GTSA is possibly looking at, we've been having a couple complaints about smoking in the Big Red Barn. And I know for those of you who haven't had the experience or have yet had the experience of TGIF, the Friday $1 beer at Big Red Barn social event, there's a lot of smokers outside, and that's where a lot of people like to get drinks. So there's been some complaints about that that we're possibly looking at trying to see if we can suggest the policy to ban smoking outside BRB as it is inside. So another thing on our plate, and just rolling along.
Thank you, Mitch. Melissa?
Yeah, sorry about that. So like I said, gender inclusive or neutral housing being brought up. The blue like transportation buses are starting again tonight. Which is just where if a student wants to get a ride home directly to their house, they can get on one of these buses and there's a schedule and everything. They're moving along on the Cayugas Watchers, which is like an initiative with alcohol. And I think that's it. Gorton and Susan Merkel, they are meeting on Thursday.
All right. Thank you, Melissa. Jim?
A question for the student assembly, if you know. Has anybody discussed a diversity class for freshmen? We talked about it in the last University Assembly meeting. It's going to affect freshmen.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to take that up? Or are you aware of the issue?
Adam Gibbon and I met with A.T. Miller and talked to him about the progress and where we think we should go. And he suggested kind of reaching out to as many faculty members as possible before we try to make like a big public thing. So I think large discussions in the SA have been postponed for a bit while we talk to more people and get more feedback.
Are you connected with our exec?
I have been in the meetings, but I have not caught up with the A.T. Miller meeting. We are going to schedule a meeting and meet again, and all three of us will talk and try to proceed with contacting more professors.
So, I don't want to get ahead of your agenda, but are we going to hold on there was a resolution that was possibly going to be brought forward.
Yes.
Is that going to hold for this issue to mature a little bit more?
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Melissa. Tanya? Would you like to give a short report for the Employee Assembly?
Sure. So the Employee Assembly is actively working on preparing for the President's address to the staff, which is October 9th. At that address, we'll be talking about where we're at with the employee survey response. So all of the committees have met. We've submitted proposals, and they've been vetted by Mary. We've been sent back on a couple of pieces to firm things up or make some changes. So hopefully he'll be able to talk fairly solidly about kind of where we're going in the short term and then where we're looking to go in the long term on the survey response, which I think is really great. At our next EA meeting, we have Paul Bursick, the Director of Benefit Services, is going to join us to talk about benefits packages for staff. I don't know if you've tied it in with our students, but one of the benefits packages that we had is going away this year, and so what new packages will be available and how that will look for employees. And then on October 15th, we will have the President and Mary joining us to talk about that related issue.
Thank you. Dean Burns isn't here. So is anybody on the Faculty Senate willing to speak a little about what they've been up to? Actually, I don't think.
I'm the only one who says that, actually. But unprepared as I am, actually, as well. There was a presentation by Joe Burns, actually, she previewed for us, because the day before the Senate meeting, he met with us. So if you can remember a 15-minute extemporaneous summary of his remarks, well done. I can't repeat that. I just can't do that. But it's in the minute. So if you want to know what he said, he previewed for us. The provost had a number of comments about issues and had a Q&A, and so those were the main memorable items.
And there's a forum.
There's a forum. Faculty forum. Actually, yeah, that was part of what he keep. There are these things called MOOCs, if I pronounce it right. M-O-O-C. And that's just the...
Online.
Right, okay. And this has become an immediate issue. So he has organized a faculty forum with some participation by people, external people from the West Coast mostly. And that's, what is that? Communication must not be that good or that good. I know he's. That was one of his main items.
Thanks.
A nice email he sent out because he gave us homework.
Thank you, Bob and Randy. We're supposed to have Ted Dodds here to make a presentation on the IT strategy plan. He is scheduled to come in at 5, so we're a little ahead of schedule. Renee Alexander from the Central Diversity Officers was supposed to come in and present as well. She cannot make it due to recent student protests and town hall meetings, so we are trying to reschedule the Central Diversity Officers for a different time.
Point of information, is there anyone who could provide an update on that particular situation? I think this would be a good opportunity for the various assemblies.
For the student protest?
Yeah.
I'm
not to put you on the spot. I just didn't know if anyone...
Do anybody know anything about the student protests lately? I could say what I know,
sure.
But...
I can talk a little bit. Just to put it in a little context, on Thursday there was a peaceful protest that was sitting outside of Day Hall, in which the demands were put forward focusing on responses to sexual assault and sexual violence on campus. And then after that, there was a meeting organized on Friday that was originally supposed to be only 25 students, but I think grew, in which the president, Susan Murphy, and Mary Opperman were there, and there was a discussion based on that. Friday, there was a fake version of the Daily Sun put out with the headline Cornell Nightly Moon, which is still online and had a variety of articles that were critiquing the campus climate, especially around gender, race, sexual identity issues. Then on Sunday, there was a kind of informal meeting of student leaders to discuss what was going on, undergraduate student leaders mostly. And then yesterday on Monday, there was a community forum held led by Renee Alexander to kind of discuss what should be done going forward. And that meeting was recorded and should be up on Cornell Cast soon. And I guess just judging from responses in the room, many of the people who had issued the demand that had been part of the protest weren't satisfied with the university's response. But there were also discussions about the tactics used, such as putting out the newspaper for whoever was behind that. There's more conversations and more things going to happen, I'm sure.
Thank you, Alex.
Just kind of back to
Isn't there a fake email from President Colson?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, that's true. And so then, yeah, when the newspaper went out, thank you for reminding me. When the newspaper went out, the Nightly Moon, someone else sent an email from an email address that was officeofthepresident.cornell@gmail.com, which they set the name as David Scorton and sent it out to the sort of impersonating the president and kind of mocking responses that he sends out to campus occurrences. And so that got a very stern response from the administration to be impersonating the president, sending it over listservs. And there's now an investigation going into it. Who sent that out?
Jim?
So the protest, is the protest the sit-in? Was it essentially saying that the climate is not good and here's what we think needs to happen to make it better? Do you know what some of the specifics were in there?
I can pull up the demand. Yeah, I mean, a lot of them were very similar to what was put out after the Sig Pi incident. So among ones that were common were having a campus climate survey, having training for faculty and staff among these issues. But there were also a few new ones that were specifically around sexual assault as well. And I can pull up the list if people are interested in hearing them.
Or just where the link is or something like that.
Sure, I could like link that in the minutes or something.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Alex. Yes, Liz.
Thank you for summarizing that. The reason why I wanted to bring it up is because clearly issues with diversity are going to be pretty important on campus this particular semester. So if you have any ideas on who we can bring in to discuss about it or anything you'd like the welfare committee to know about, just let us know so that we can take action in a timely and efficient manner.
Thank you, Liz. Alex?
Can I just add that at the forum yesterday, Dean Hubble made a comment about how, like, every year has its own feel and its own unique issues, and he's starting to think that this year it's going to be around sexual assault and these sorts of issues. So I think it's a good idea for the University Assembly to have a role in that.
Thank you. We are going to move on to new businesses for today's meeting. So you guys should all have gotten an email about the newest appointee to the University Hearing and Review Board. It is the University Assembly's job to approve any faculty appointees. So unfortunately, I do not have the name of the professor. So the newest appointee is Professor Gilbert, and Professor
Mailer.
So do anybody object to appointing Professor Gilbert and Mailer to the University Hearing and Review Board? I hear no oppositions. So Professor Gilbert and Mailer is appointed to the University Hearing and Review Board. I now motion to recess the assembly until Ted Dodd comes in with the presentation and sets up. Oh,
unless
there. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to ask the debater to talk, you're not going to. So, I wrote an editorial last week about MOOCs. They're massive open online courses, or massive online open courses. I haven't got those down yet. But basically, online education is something that universities have been talking around and flirting with for a while. eCornell was set up about a decade ago, and that's set up as a for-profit group that gives certificate programs where you pay to join. MOOCs are kind of a new way of looking at online education, a new model, I should say, where it's open enrollment, so the ones that have been out have no fee to take it. Some might have a fee if you want to get a certificate for them, but most of the ones that have been out have no fee, and they just handle massive enrollment. So they really took off after a course in Stanford run by Professor Sebastian Thrun, who decided to put a course on artificial intelligence online, and it ended up having 160,000 people enrolled in it,
from over 190 countries. So that got a lot of people's attention that this is spreading and might be something that they want to look into. Since then, there have been these kind of, I guess coalition is the wrong word, but groups of universities that have teamed together to put some courses online. So there's edX, which is Harvard, MIT, and Berkeley, UC Berkeley, that have teamed up to make that one. And then the much larger one now is Coursera, which has, I think, over 60 universities now. They announced a whole bunch of new ones actually the day after my article. So they have many universities teamed up to offer a few classes on there. And it's something that's still developing. By no means is the business model set. There have been discussions as to whether you end up charging students for it or alternatively charge recruiters to allow them to see the results of tests taken in there to allow them to recruit more efficiently. So none of that's really set up. It's something that everyone's figuring out. But anything that can reach 160,000 people in 190 countries is something that universities probably want to think about. So there's a lot of discussions about whether Cornell should jump in on that game, how that might affect eCornell, how that might affect courses taught on campus, and what's going forward.
All right. Thank you, Alex. We will now have open forum for any issues that members want to bring up.
Elizabeth? So one of the issues that we were talking about with the EB, and we didn't have a resolution prepared for this particular meeting, was creating a communication ad hoc committee just to sort of discuss whether we should create a communication role for the UA or whether, like, managing the sort of coffee talk, those sorts of issues and that sort of thing. And I didn't know if anyone had any thoughts about developing a position for, like, a communication coordinator or anything along those lines. Obviously, as a communication researcher, I'm very interested in this particular issue. So,
I guess I would say Tommy Bruce has been more than willing to make space in the staff, the student papers to publish our thoughts or to, you know, communicate what we're doing, what we're thinking about, where we're headed, what we're thinking about dealing with. So there are many ways to do that, essentially with emails, and I know the Office of the Assembly is Amy, Ari, can get you connected with whomever. So allow you to do those kinds of things on relatively short notice, you know, a week, 10 days out kinds of things. As far as something more personal and engaging, like coffee hour, I don't have any thoughts on that. I don't know who would come see, you know, how many. When we've had big issues, you know, Melissa and others have manned 2 4-hour blocks and seen two people, you know, yeah, on very weighty issues that we're told many people were very adamant about. Mm-hmm. So it's an issue of timing, people knowing, you know, and you just never know when somebody's going to come with something really worth taking up. But it is manpower intensive, and in the past we haven't gotten a lot of face-to-face use of it. In other words, these are open forums. Come see us.
Mm-hmm.
I every year since I've been involved with this, we've tried to improve communications. Every year we've tried little different tactics, and there's not been a golden BB that we can just latch onto and go, that's it. So I applaud anything you attempt to do. It can never hurt to keep trying, but I would definitely take Tommy up on his offer to, you know, put a place in the Cornell Daily Sun in the same place, same page, essentially, and give you, you know, yay piece of space to populate it. But he doesn't want it to be sporadic. He'd want something at regular time intervals, so if someone's willing to commit to do that, there is a form that will reach a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know the response that will get, but I would start there if you will.
I guess one of my questions would be also time commitments from the assembly leaders and the UA members here, if anyone is willing or interested, because obviously we have face-to-face greetings. That, as charming as I am, I'm not the only person who's going to be able to draw a crowd. Mm-hmm. So,
basically, what we're asking is the main purpose of a coffee hour is so we can promote the presence of the university assembly on campus. The SA have a very strong presence in the undergraduate population, but nobody knows about the UA in any of our constituencies. Well, not very popular. So I just want to promote the presence of the university assembly on campus with maybe a drop-by, just have coffee with the UA, or later on when issues arise, have coffee hours with a specific speaker or issue. But all of these require time commitment from the university assembly members. So, yes, Jim.
We had an idea last year that didn't come to fruition. We had a member of Ramsey who was very interested in student climate and things like that, who was interested in starting a blog, and we were looking at push notifications. So when we put something on the, you know, the assembly's website, things like that, the people who subscribe get pushed, you know, or, you know, using technology to push it to people that expressed any kind of interest in it, and to put it on the you know, place on the pages of the different year classes, you know, class of 2014 page and stuff like that. We've definitely got the listserv working better than it has ever worked, but it doesn't, to my knowledge, push notifications. You're still passively having to go seek and find and pull. But Ramsey had an idea of doing some kind of blog, and, you know, of course that's work, but, you know, posting things, and there has been, in other issues, a lot of following for certain issues on those kinds of forums.
Mm-hmm.
It reaches the whole community, not just Cornell itself. So.
Brandy.
I've sat in those empty rooms for a number of times, but given that I like coffee, and I'll volunteer if you have something that I can do.
Melissa?
I just want to say, like, what the essay has been.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the past they used to have, like, office hour type of things, and, like, FA, they did a variety of different types of things like that. I know that they weren't too successful for the essay, and so they kind of put doing that and steered away from that and did other things, just sitting up communication, like he said, where you're pushing it out there,
mm-hmm.
instead of sitting in a room and hoping that people come to you. So that's just the experience with the essay doing that type of thing.
Thank you, Melissa. Mitch, do you have anything to say? No, sorry, I saw you raise your hand. I just saw something from the corner of my eye.
We're really wanting to talk to you. No, I mean, I think it, you know, it's kind of, you know, it just seems like communication from the university assembly and the point at which the UA becomes important for, you know, the average student, the average grad student, the average employee, the average faculty member who are not super concerned with campus governance. You know, we become important when issues come up that really affect them. And so, you know, if we have a coffee hour, it's not issue themed or particularly COVID, you know, what are we doing?
One of the... No, that's a really good point. And one of the points of discussion at the EB was to have town hall meetings, like, ready to go, if that makes any sense. Like, have the
mm-hmm.
yeah. the diversity officers on
mm-hmm.
sort of,
yes.
not on call. I mean, they're not EMS or anything. But in case, like, something escalated, to have to be a facilitator for that sort of discussion in the community.
Tanya?
So I'll just put out, the EA is in the process of preparing to do open forums on different topics related to the employee survey.
Mm-hmm.
We will have our first one in November, and what we're doing is we're partnering with each of the committees and having them come, and then we're blasting out saying we're talking about this specific issue. So I can let you know in November if anybody shows up to those. You know, it'll be hit or miss, but I think it's important that we will come. But we do the president's address every year, and that's a big thing for staff, and that's kind of our biggest push. And if we get 350 of the 7,000 staff members, you know, to come once a year.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you, Tanya. Melissa, do you have another comment? Jim.
Very briefly, one of the points of communication issues is that people don't know what the University Assembly can do for them.
Exactly.
Oh, we have the University Assembly. Mm-hmm. When do I go to them? And what we have found is, you know, freshmen get, say, they want bike paths, or they want recycling, or better use of lights. And so they start their own committee. They don't realize what's on campus. They don't know how to, you know, we find out about it, rein them in, and channel it in the right direction as far as how to actually achieve their results.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of education is just, nobody's interested in it until they have an issue to burn, or to work on. So, again, I would recommend pushing information and keeping, again, this is the hot one right now.
Mm-hmm.
As ideas come up, where do we fit in to where they're going and steer the piece as constructively as we can.
Thank you, Jim. So, what I hear is that we need to have specific issues to bring up. So what I want to know right now is, will members of the University Assembly be willing to put in extra time, thank you, Alex, outside of meeting hours to maybe meet over coffee and snacks, you know, for a specific issue? I guess we could do a voice vote.
Or if you're interested, you could email us.
Yes.
That might be a...
Another thing that the executive board will look into is maybe a marketing and advertising campaign to promote, you know, what the UA could offer the different constituencies, and maybe have posters, or we will explore other options.
Editorial?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know what campus governance is? I mean, we've had those before.
A picture of us all going.
Well, it's something that can come out every fall term.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It constantly needs to be renewed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We will definitely try to get our faith out there more. The Daily Sun will definitely be a great option for us. We will work on contacting the Daily Sun. Tommy Bruce is apparently our point of contact right now. So, a voice vote really fast. Is there a positive, I guess, feel for maybe having a coffee hour and throwing maybe an hour or two of your time into this? All that agree, say aye.
Aye.
All that disagree, say nay. All right, the ayes have it, and we will look into this issue in the next EB meeting. Thank you, everyone. Next item on the agenda is the presentation about the IT strategic plan by Ted Dotz. Ted, thank you for coming here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time.
Do you need any setup? Or
well, we could do it a couple of different ways. I should also like to introduce my colleague, Steve Schuster, who some of you may already know, associate CIO, and we're working very closely together along with a countable number of working groups and committees on the strategic plan. So I thought it would be a good idea for us both to come. I do have, you know, a little PowerPoint deck that I could display. Or I can just kind of talk about the process that we're going through, what our time schedule is, the engagement that we've already undertaken on our planning, and then just maybe have a conversation about it, rather than just me sort of standing in front and talking. But I'm happy to go either direction.
What does the assembly want?
I mean,
I kind of like visual aids.
Usually I go the other direction because of the IT.
All in favor of visual aids? Aye.
Sure.
Aye. All right.
And we know the projector works, right?
Hopefully, this is a new building. Getting better, right?
Operational infrastructure and business practices and so on depend on IT
for them to simply be able to function. But none of this stuff is going to differentiate us from any of the Ivy Leagues that we're competitors with or any of the other universities where we want to differentiate Cornell. And that's where the differentiating activity, this happens to be a picture of the way that we're talking about, the utility infrastructure and differentiating activities. And these are the ones that are much more closely related to the core academic mission of the university, teaching research and outreach and so on. And the other ones are kind of the operational piece. So what, and it's just a couple of examples of what those are, you know, managing desktops, application software, our finance system, our HR system, those kind of things, foundational infrastructure. And then a few examples of differentiating activities where right now I would say the university is pretty inefficient and spends way more on an in this area than it needs to, and as a result is not investing as much as it, I think, needs to. I am relatively new to Cornell. And so, for example, I was surprised getting here a year ago, January, that we don't have a very well-established practice of instructional design and support within the academic units. I'm more accustomed to an environment where you would have people close to our faculty and instructors who would work with them to kind of translate technological tools and the pedagogical and content mastery that the faculty would have into something that promotes and enhances learning. We're fairly immature in that component. So the goal, One of my goals, very explicitly, is to maximize the value we get of the utilities, redirect the investment there, and really rebalance the kind of portfolio of expenditure away from the utilities, so doing them at high scale with cloud services and those kinds of things, so we can invest more directly in there. Sure, go ahead.
In terms of utility services, there's infrastructure. Your intent to help PeopleSoft go to the university?
Do I have any sense of how PeopleSoft go to the university?
For me, I think it's a horrible program that they designed.
So I don't disagree with that.
But
one of the challenges we have right now, to give an example of how investment gets allocated in here. So the company that owns that system, Oracle, informed us that effective at the end of this calendar year, they will no longer support and provide regulatory caching for changes to the system. And so now we're trying to figure out a way, do we do a technical upgrade, do we go in a different path? But your point about some of that foundational infrastructure and application software, a lot of the systems that we have today are a challenge to use. PeopleSoft and Advising is a good example of that, but there are many others. I've heard that from students. I've heard that from staff and faculty. So this plan won't fix that overnight, other than to be able to help us to make sure that we're making the best and most transparent and useful investments in things like PeopleSoft so that we can fix things like the Advising interface or the Student Center and the Faculty Center is another usability challenge that I've heard with people. Okay, so anyway, the idea behind at least my suggestion here is that we shift the investment away from those areas where we're not getting differentiation, but the operational importance to those other areas. And that's going to be, I think, a huge culture shift for the IT staff of the university, because the skill set that's required to do those legacy services the way that we have been, and the skill set that is required to move into more of a differentiating model, getting a lot more use operational and infrastructure, the utility services from the cloud, is a big transition in terms of just who does what and how, what skill sets IT people need. This shows that you can't trust me to do graphics, because I know it's a really kind of simple and goofy thing. But this is our fundamental framework for the way we're doing our strategic plan with people in the middle. So the idea is to develop a strategic plan that's really about how people interact with and use technology, not solely for the differentiating stuff, but to help move us there. And you can just see around this star or wheel, whatever it is, that there are some pretty, I think, expected categories that we want to be able to have sections within the plan that speaks to, over the next 3 to 5 years, what investments, what outcomes,
what approaches will we take with respect to learning technology?
Many of you may have been following the explosion in interest, which you might think of as wave two of online learning, over the past year with the rise of the advent of MOOCs and massive open online courses. A lot of conversation around learning technology has been quite a lot online learning. But also in classroom learning, we've done a survey of faculty back in May and asked them what their priorities were with respect to learning technologies. And the number one issue was, I'd like to have basic facilities in every classroom where I teach that work, that I know how to use, and are the same from one classroom to another, and if something breaks, it gets fixed quickly. So this is going to be just an example of within the learning technologies envelope of that strategic plan. There will almost certainly be some specific objective around how we improve our basic classroom technologies, as well as the kind of investments we're making for online learning. And so you can just see, I'm not going to go into all the specifics of this, because we've only got a few minutes to kind of fly over this. But on the research side, the way that we're dealing with this is I'm meeting with individual researchers. I've been doing this over the course of the summer. It's kind of a fun way for me to get to know the campus and the diversity of our research mission reasonably well. And then identifying out of that key themes that seem to be mentioned as issues that are either impediments or concerns among our research community. And a lot of that has to do with data, archiving, accessing, preservation of the scholarly record, some stuff around infrastructure and speeds and feeds on the network, but not a huge amount of that. And so that will be how we'll start to craft the research pieces of the plan. Where the student experience over here, there's a committee that the Vice President for Student Academic Services, Susan Murphy, and I co-chair with faculty and students on it. We have a number of engagements planned in the next couple weeks, now that classes are back in session, to have interaction with existing student groups so that we can get some good feedback from them. We have a student survey that students last year participated in and will again this year. So gathering information from there, what can we do, what should our priorities be, what investments should we be considering over the next number of years to improve the student experience with ICS. And I think a lot of the things we'll see, coming back to your question about PeopleSoft, is I think a lot of people find the interface with course enrollment registration to be frustrating and difficult. So, you know, identifying that as a priority doesn't necessarily fix the problem, but it helps me when we're duping it out with other projects and so on, where the investment goes, to be able to say that our students have identified something like that as a key priority. Service excellence is really just all of the kind of operational services I've mentioned before. And then the IT career framework is, how do we provide a roadmap for the IT staff of the university to kind of develop the skills and expertise that they'll need. I'm going to pass over this a little bit. I will just do a bit of a shout out. One of the aspects, one of the ways in which we've been trying to gain community engagement, we had essentially a one-day on-campus conference 2 weeks ago today. It's a tough time of the term to get student or faculty participation, but we did have 300 people, a small number of students. You might have seen an article in the Cornell Sun and the student reporter that came up to the meeting. We had about 50 or so faculty during the course of the day, two of the leading IT thought leaders in the country that were keynote speakers in the morning, and then about 31 small group sessions where people got together and in facilitated discussion groups with scribes and so on, talked about issues like learning technology, where should we go with that, administrative systems, business processes, all sorts of things, research, computing, and so on. And we'll have a summary report on that by the end of the month, and that will help us to do some more of our planning. Insofar as how we're organized to do this, there are, as you would expect at any university, some number of committees. And the ones on the, I'm not going to read them all out to you, but the ones at the top are standing existing committees that we're repurposing and going to them and saying, will you author a section of the plan that has to do with, for example, the student experience, learning technology, and the faculty perspective on the use of IP. So that's what those three groups are for. And then we have these ad hoc groups that we put together specifically and only for the duration of the strategic planning process to address research and scholarship, service excellence, and the career. And this other half of the graphic gives you an example of the kind of processes that we've gone through, the kind of engagement. I'm not going to read all that stuff to you. Faculty survey, I mentioned before, student survey, and so on. And then in terms of what has been happening over the past number of months, we've developed a set of guiding principles. All this stuff is available on the website on the cio.cornell.edu website. Went through a process for about 3 or 4 months where we just did conference and Cornell Chronicle and a couple of other vehicles, posed a question of the week to people and got people to respond interactively on a blog. What would you do if you're the CIO? The first decision you make, what should we stop doing? What should we do that we're not doing? Got some good input from that. The survey, the faculty survey I mentioned before, our IT event, and so on. So you can sort of look through here and see from a scheduling point of view where we've been, where we're going. The plan is to have an ultimate version of the draft, an ultimate draft of the overall plan, complete by December, and then through my senior advisory group, IT Governing Council, various other deans, provosts, and so on, to further vet that in the latter part of the fall, nearly part of 2013, and then in March of 2013, I'll present what I hope will be a finished plan to the trustees in a major presentation we do with them, doing with them in March of 2013. So that's a sort of 12 and a half minutes breeze through of why now, why is it important, how we've organized it, and what we expect the outcomes to be. I'm going to pause for breath. And I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dotz. Does the Assembly have any questions for Mr. Dotz?
It's a very
simple
question. What percent of the bandwidth that we have to think about time goes to entertainment in video meetings?
Oh, you mean literally bandwidth, like network bandwidth, not mental bandwidth. Okay. I was completely following a different thought, you know, because we often talk about brain power bandwidth. I don't know, but it's whatever the amount is. So first of all, police content. There's no doubt that if you go into residences and other venues, you're probably going to get a fair amount of people, using their internet connectivity for purposes other than scholarly. Right? Part of the issue is that from a student perspective, if you're asking specifically about students, because it's not just students who use the internet for entertainment, but students certainly have this network usage-based billing thing that above, is it 15 gigs per month? Yeah, it's at least 50 gigs per month that is sort of a free quota. After that, people have to pay for it. And so that's a bit of a dampener on just using handles amount. But perhaps as interesting, if not, and then even more relevant to the academic community, is nothing insofar as the use people make of our network for entertainment impinges upon its value and utility for academic purposes. So we have very, very, very comprehensive connectivity to the research network, which is not where, that's not the source of a lot of the kind of entertainment stuff, and separating it between sort of commodity internet and research connectivity is one way in which you can control for that. So if you as a researcher need to get the connectivity to the particle accelerator or social media or something, and you're not impeded by someone downloading the DVD or kind of thing. I can't tell you 17% or
17%.
It would just be a guess.
Yeah.
I would guess probably 30%. That would go for, I'll say, discretionary network usage.
I wouldn't put any store in that.
No, I wouldn't.
No, I'm just requesting.
You can't, and I'm glad you don't have it. Yeah. Just curious. Yeah. I think on your previous slide, you were doing the students' workshops all day. What do you anticipate they're looking like, and how are you trying to identify the different student populations?
We are. Actually, the student experience steering committee that we have, we met with to think about and work through how best to connect the students. Right? So there's several groups that we're going to go after. One is the TA group. So we need to reach graduate level students. So certainly the TA group will be meeting with. There's also in many of the colleges student dean advisory groups that we have permission to reach into and meet with. So as Ted mentioned, these will be smaller groups. We plan also probably on serving pizza or ice cream. It can't be fully inclusive, but rather representative groups that we'll be looking to reach out to. So those are two examples. I can't remember
the
student assembly is certainly not one. So groups like that are already established.
And we never have enough ways consulting people, especially with a large and diverse student population. But we have students on pretty much all of those steering committees and advisory groups. It's not always feasible just because of other demands on the student time for them to attend every meeting, especially with the summer and all that. But we definitely have representatives from both undergraduate and graduate students in our assemblies. But as Steve said, and I didn't mention this before, but one of the things we're trying to do is find the right balance between as comprehensive a consultative process as we can make happen. If we have to get the job done, we don't want to spend 5 years doing it. We want to spend kind of a chunk of time, and then we're done. And we keep refining the plan over time. So that's
the
plan.
Don't forget the GPS, right? That's the
plan.
Okay. I guess this is more organization than a question, but I'm a citizen, and I love to be
and we've been waiting, so
I meant the outgoing people in May or June or something, but then I think we just haven't picked up.
What email can I add?
Ted.dos, TED, period, DOVDS, not the way it's spelled in the agenda. 1D, 3D, and DOS,
XLAD.
I didn't see a circle dealing with data assurance, data protection. You know, you want to keep everybody unencumbered, but that becomes a growing concern. Will your strategic plans have a focus on that, or will it be built into each of the subparts, or you're not sure yet?
I'm perfectly candid. I'm not sure yet, but I do know that we have a very strong policy office that reports into the Steve along with IT security and so on. So I think your point about data protection and data privacy and those kinds of issues you're raising are obviously important. Whether we will have, I don't envision there being a specific kind of chapter or section on that. It may, in some respects, fall more into guiding principles. Because to me, what I want to see in the strategic plan is these are the things that the campus community has identified as priorities that we must do something about. And if we find, if along the way, if there are specific things in the policy realm that protection that we identify that we're not doing, then by all means, they fit in there. If they don't fit in one of those categories, we'll find a way to do it.
So I guess my thought would be the technology is moving forward. Everybody's now bringing a MacBook Air to class and all those kinds of things. There's bandwidth and access and all those issues, which I think are done very, very well. But as that trend continues, there's going to be larger and larger. We have an active campus. We've got projects going on with that other day. And, you know, it wasn't an IT related impersonation, but they created the Gmail account and essentially, you know, subdued and
you were
transferring
your trip aware of it.
And you know, with activist campuses, you've got all kinds of people who, I don't know what they would do with future technologies, but, you know, it's got to be built in, it's got to be looked at, and then it's also got to be loose enough that people can get things done. So, I mean, from a strategic standpoint, obviously you know better than all of us, but it's got to be kind of part and parcel of everything we can do.
No, those are very good points, and I mean, it's a slightly different example, but equally, I think, galvanizing for people. So, I don't know how many different systems of video capture there are, sorry, lecture capture there are across campus. There's three large ones that a lot of people use, and there's a whole bunch of others that are used in visual bits and pieces. So if we improve our capacity to do lecture capture, and if we use some of that stuff in combination with massive open online courses, if we do more online both for to support blended learning in the classroom, but also to reach out to the rest of the world the way, of course, Sarah and EdX and so are doing, who owns what IP?
Yeah.
So the whole, you know, who owns my lecture is, I think, still not an entirely clear answer to that question. So I think some of those things that might squirt outside of an IP plan specifically will need to be captured within it so that we don't go off and make all sorts of investments in technology and then find, you know what, we can't really use it really far because we didn't think about IT or policy or something. Just sort of amplifying.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you again for coming in. My question is related to that, the two important ways that you said that IT works on campus. So we have the utility services and infrastructure, and then you have the differentiated activities. I think a lot of people can speak very intimately to, I want more bandwidth and the infrastructural components of IT, but I was wondering how you were tackling the technology that we may not be currently using idea, if that makes any sense, like the fact that we don't have technology specialists in each department. If people don't know that might be an option, how can you project those future desires? And this kind of folds in, I have two questions. In the idea with projecting and looking forward with IT, since you said this is mostly looking at a 3 to 5 year plan, how this might work with the New York Tech campus?
Yes, sure. Okay. So the first question about how do you maybe identify what those differentiators are that don't immediately jump out at you? Because we all know that we need a network and we need computers and we need storage and so on. All those things can form part of that utility ecosystem, and increasingly that stuff is being purchased as a service from the cloud as opposed to we have to run all of them. And that transition to a cloud model, which Cornell is very deeply involved in a lot of different levels, is underway right now. It's not something that's going to happen. It has been happening and it continues to happen. For differentiators, I think there's a couple of different ways that, and this is not prescriptive, it's just kind of my off-the-cuff thoughts about this. One is that we have a lot of IT staff and not IT staff obviously, but a lot of IT staff sprinkled around the university, close to faculty, close to academic research and so on, whose daily lives are overwhelmingly focused on the operation of utility services. So if we can find ways in which the amount of effort and the cost and effort and so on that goes into that can be reduced, then you free up capacity of people to do more of those differentiators. So it's far too simple-minded a way of saying this, but if over time we get better at doing basic desktop support, troubleshooting, my machine doesn't work, you know, so on, if we get better at that, could we transition some people who are doing that desktop support work into learning technologists and work more closely with faculty, applying the knowledge they have of how the technology works. Maybe that's one example of where a differentiator could fit. Another thing, I think, is just to make sure that we are purposeful in getting ourselves exposed to best practices, innovative ideas that come from outside of Cornell. So that was part of my thinking in inviting these two thought leaders to come in and talk to us 2 weeks ago about events happening at a national, sometimes international level. Because I'll tell you, I like to think that I'm fairly up on a lot of this stuff, but I learned a lot that morning that I thought, boy, you know, making notes and so on. And sometimes that can just trigger, you know, ideas. And likewise, just getting people together and networking makes a big difference too. So it's not a great answer, but those are some examples, I think, of how you can identify what Smora's differentiator is, as well as just general trends. On the New York City Tech Campus side of things, to me, so we're working very closely with Ann Huntlocker and Kathy Dove and the team down there. I just came from a meeting with them before coming here, as a matter of fact. And right now their real issue is, you know, the basic infrastructure they need for their beta class, which will be in January. But we're already working with them and the model that I'm, you know, we're sort of talking about is they can become the innovative thin end of the wedge, doing things differently because they're in sort of startup mode, and then we can take what we learn that works well in a startup kind of mode and retrofit it back to the Ithaca campus so that we have a little bit more of that direct pipeline benefit from the fact that they are effectively a startup university, not a startup company, but a startup university, and they have that same flexibility and nimbleness. So that's one of the ways we'll help that will work.
I've been a graduate student here for this my fourth year, and you know, when I first got here, I was really struck by, you know, the fact that when I entered in 2009, there was no email hosted by Cornell available to us at all. We were told to use this Cmail program, and then and then in 2010, we were allowed to, you know, opt into Exchange, which I did because that was what I was comfortable with from before. But I still know that the most grad students I know seem to be using the Cmail, the kind of Google, you're basically just using Google, you know, with the Cornell brand. I was wondering, do you know any data on what proportion of grad students are using this cloud, kind of, the Google Cloud, and do you have any idea of how satisfied people are with those kind of Google clouds?
So the answer to the first question is, I don't know what proportion of grad students are using Gmail or Cmail, but I would expect it to be probably the majority.
Okay.
And as far as satisfaction levels, email tends to be one, for whatever reason, something that people love their particular system and don't want anyone to convince them that they need to move off of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people love Gmail. I don't particularly find it, as I don't find I'm like you. Prefer Outlook and Exchange. But I know especially a number of faculty members that I've worked with that think they can't understand why anyone in their right mind would use that for the other system.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that might be reassuring is we are actually moving our on-premises Microsoft Exchange, which for those of you who don't use it, email, calendar, and a bunch of other stuff, from all directly integrated Microsoft to their cloud offer. So come by the time of March, all faculty and staff email that's currently hosted on-premises for Exchange will be running in the Microsoft cloud from the fall Office 365. And from that, we get access to a whole bunch of other cloud-based products and so on that I'll stay for some other kind of conversation. But that option of using Gmail or Exchange in the cloud will be open to students. And you can, I think, actually, I'm not sure if there's a restriction ability as well, but rounding gets weird to go through, you know, using things and editing and stuff like that. But that option will certainly be there. It sounds like you're already on Exchange.
Yeah. Actually, that was the other follow-up was because the email you sent out said faculty and staff will be moving to this new Microsoft cloud.
Yeah.
And the email was not clear that students would have the option of going as well.
Okay. I remember putting that specifically in at least one message, but that doesn't mean that it's
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Yes, they will.
Good.
You will.
Kind of to play off of that, the difference between the Exchange and the Gmail, for the Exchange,
account, there are a limit for how many emails you can get in the inbox. And so the Gmail account is more or less infinite. And, well, I mean, pretty much. I mean, there's not.
It's actually even more than between the two.
Is it?
Well, because
for some reason, whenever somebody sends an email as a graduate or undergraduate student from the exchange, they will say it says that their inbox is full, but when they send it, we'll still get sent. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but...
I'm not disputing it, but no, I'm
not. No, I mean, my professor is... At the end of every email, it says, don't know if you got this, it says your mailbox is full. And they said that they wrote it from Exchange, and it's going over to Gmail. I don't know if there's something there.
When that happens, is your email? Is your mailbox?
No, it's nowhere in New York or San Francisco.
I don't understand why that would happen. We could have something to help desk or something.
I was going to say, when it does happen, it's important to send that to the help desk so we can spend 3 hours.
Yeah, I can't explain why that would be.
First after we
yeah. But you shouldn't have inbox size constraints on either of these systems. The inbox size for the exchange is going up considerably over what the campus hosted version could be, simply because Microsoft's got noodles of infrastructure.
I have
kind of
one last comment. I like your idea of moving from the utility side into the value added, but as you know, the counterparts here with the IT staff that have been urbanized and let go, a lot of the departments are lucky if we have one in-house IT person. So it's a different skill set. You can have less repair and help, but it's usually a different person or a lot different background in how to use that technology. Yeah. And they're the closest to the factory in that building. Likewise, if you're doing cloud services and you start paying a fee, that kind of is running marching army problem. You have less flexibility in one level, because I don't know the place to run that.
I actually think we have way more flexibility in the cloud world than we ever could possibly have doing more stuff on premises. First of all,
this is the differentiation.
No, I'm thinking about the utility.
The cost savings there. Oh. Perhaps you can you can restaff or reshuffle staff. But you start using less money, they start giving you less money. Now you want to do your differentiating. So your strategic plan, I think, is a great idea because it gives you the tools to go accommodate the trustees for the kind of budget you need to make that transition happen. But
you come in, it sounds like you should be coming in there with me.
You need some movements, I know it. So
part of this also is giving academic units the option of how they want to invest. So if we can reduce the cost to a college or a school, by provisioning cloud services instead of on-premises, that's just as an example, then lower the cost of the colleges in a way that liberates them to say, well, now that I've got this savings, what do I want to do with it? Do I want to transition this into something different? Do I want to invest in classrooms? Do I want to do something else? And I think that's a good thing too. And hopefully the strategic plan, gives more people some focus on a vision for IT that says, I want to repurpose this in an IT
Thank you, Ted, and thank you, Steve, for your time. We are running out of time at this current meeting, so if you have any questions for the IT strategic people, please email them. I now motion to adjourn this meeting. Something. All right. Adjourn the University Assembly meeting at 5:54 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.